This, we're talking about rarefied air here at the Connor Brown Shares. The likes of Mario Lemieux, Luke Robitaille, Brad Hull, Teemu Selanne, Steve Yzerman, in terms of consecutive goal-scoring streaks over the past 30 years. Mario, by the way, had 12 back in the day. Connor Brown sitting at 8, try to extend it to 9 tomorrow when the Winnipeg Jets are back in town. Sens coming off a 4-2 win last night. JR, Ian Mendez is in for Simmer again today until 9 o'clock. Hammer's here as well. And without further ado, let us get right to the phones and welcome, as we do each and every weekday morning at this time, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to Pierre McGuire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
I'm very well, JR. Good morning. Hello, Ian.
Good morning, Pierre.
All right, so Pierre, there's really no explaining this, Connor. How are the Winnipeg Jets going to stop Connor Brown at this point? Because that was not, you know, he's now scoring goals against Vezina Trophy winning goalies that have no business going in. Is that the definition of a heater that he's on right now?
Oh, he's smoking right now. You know, I'll never forget when Mike Babcock was coaching Toronto. Austin Matthews was playing on a line with Connor Brown and Zach Hyman, and Mike used to say to me all the time, look at Austin, he's playing with the animals. He's talking about Connor Brown and Zach Hyman, and he said that as a term of endearment because of how hard and how diligent they played the game. And you can see the reward, obviously, for Zach Hyman, who's played fantastically well for Toronto for a long time now. And for Connor Brown, you can just see it's not just the hard hitting, and it's not just the penalty killing. It's not just the role playing. It's the scoring as well. He's just getting the puck, and he's shooting it on goal, and he's not missing the net. And because he's not missing the net, not because he's not overthinking the game, he's being rewarded for it. So he's always been a really hard, in-your-face player. But, man, oh, man, it's fun to see him get rewarded offensively. I couldn't be more happy for a player like that.
Let's stick with the Sens. And they did move Erik Gudbranson yesterday, Pierre, to the Nashville Predators for a seventh-round pick down the road. I'm just curious where you think the fit is with Gudbranson in Nashville.
Well, they just want physicality in the back end. They want to obviously try to have enough depth if they do make the playoffs. So I think more than anything else, they just wanted to make sure that they had a bigger body that could play a robust style of game. And you know, they have Mark Borowiecki down there. They're trying, I think, more than anything else, just to be a team that's harder to play against physically. And Erik definitely brings that.
Do you think that at the end of the day, because a month ago, it was all the Nashville Predator players that were at the top of the TSN trade bait list, headed by, you know, Matthias Ekholm and several other players. Philip Forsberg was mentioned. At the end of the day, they've gone on a bit of a winning streak here. They're in a playoff spot, but it's not guaranteed. Do you think it was the right move for Nashville to stay the course, keep their players, and try to make the playoffs?
100%. They're trying to gain market credibility. They've got some new people involved in their ownership group. David Poyle's obviously not getting any younger. And, you know, he had that trip to the final in 2017 with Nashville where they lost to Pittsburgh. But I think, you know what, they've done some real good things there in terms of drafting over time. And they're starting to get some of their players back healthy. And they want to give themselves a chance to be in the playoffs. And, you know what, once you get in the playoffs, it's like the lottery. You got to be in it to win it. And if you're getting the playoffs, anything can happen. So I respect the fact that their ownership group really wants to get after it and that their management people want to get after it.
As JR mentioned in his update, Pierre, this was the quietest NHL trade deadline since the year 2000, but we did have a rather significant deal that came in right at the wire. Washington and Detroit. Anthony Mantha goes from Detroit to Washington in exchange for Jakub Vrána, Richard Panik, and then a first-round pick this year to Detroit and a second-rounder next year to Detroit. A pretty significant trade. What's your takeaway from this Washington-Detroit deal?
Short-term, it really helps Washington. I think people are going to see the real Anthony Mantha, the one that a lot of Canadian fans saw at the World Championship a few years ago, where he had a fantastic World Championship. He's never played an NHL playoff game. He's been kicked in the teeth a lot. It hasn't been a lot of fun being around the Red Wings because of the rebuild they're going through, and it's been a constant rebuild for a while. I think they're on the right track now. Steve Yzerman's got a real good plan in place with Chris Draper, so I think that's real positive for Detroit. The fact that they accumulated draft picks is great. Panik is just a player that just came off a waiver, so I don't think there was much use for him in Washington anyways. We'll see how he pans out in Detroit long-term, no pun intended. And, you know, the biggest thing with Vrána, he's got great outside speed. He can go to the net, but he needs a playmaking center to really help him utilize his skills. So we'll see what Detroit has in terms of that. But I think it's a good trade for both teams, short-term for Washington, long-term very solid for Detroit, especially if they use those draft picks well, Ian.
What changed in Detroit, though? They just signed Mantha to a long-term extension, I believe, back in November. We're 4 or 5 months down the road. He would seem to me, Pierre, that Steve Yzerman is trying to build something there, that might be the kind of player that you'd want to keep. Was the package just too enticing for him?
Probably the package was enticing for them, obviously. And I think the other thing, JR, is maybe, the player just wasn't that happy going through the trials and tribulations of not being a playoff player ever in the NHL. I mean, that's not an easy thing to go through. And so maybe he just became frustrated, and management sensed that, or the coaching staff sensed that. And again, I'm speculating, but something had to go against him to get him moved out of there, because I know that they had high hopes for him. And I really believe he will be a 30 to 40 goal scorer in Washington. I don't think he'll be, a single-digit goal scorer. I think he's going to be a high double-digit goal scorer, especially with Backstrom and Kuznetsov there as center iceman.
What I thought was interesting, Pierre, as we look at the trade deadline, kind of the period around it, I felt like every team in the East Division, the Big Four, kind of made significant moves, right? We talked about Mantha going to Washington. The Islanders get Palmieri, Hall to Boston, Jeff Carter to Pittsburgh. As you now look at the post-trade deadline East Division, which a lot of people think is the most compelling, tight, competitive division, how do you kind of analyze that, and who comes out ahead in your books?
Well, Pittsburgh really made a good pickup with Jeff Carter. He fits in really well. Now it depends on whether they get Evgeny Malkin and Brandon Tanev back. If they get both those players back in Pittsburgh, they just got Teddy Bluger back. That changes the whole dynamic for their team in Pittsburgh. So they become a very difficult team to play against. In terms of Washington, I like the Mantha addition, especially short-term. So we'll see again how that plays out. But Washington's going to be a tough out. There's no question in my mind they're going to be a tough out. I think the biggest thing with Boston is Taylor Hall is going to have to, really put up. He has not played particularly well this year, and he did not have a good playoff last year for Arizona. So it'll be interesting to see how he does there. Curtis Lazar could have a bigger impact there than Taylor Hall. I'm not kidding you. We'll see. But he could. He really could. But the biggest thing with the Bruins, though, it has nothing to do with what they did at the deadline. It comes down to what goes on at the infirmary. They need Charlie McAvoy. They need Matt Grizzlick, and they need Brandon Carlo back. They need those three guys back on defense. Their defense is decimated. Remember Krug in St. Louis and Charles in Washington. So basically, they've lost five of their top six guys. That's almost impossible to overcome. So that's a big thing, and plus their goaltending situation. So that's a big part of what's going to go on with Boston as they go into the playoffs.
All right, before we get to the Ottawa story, there was a fair number of the kind of typical deals we see on trade deadline day, which is kind of depth pieces for late round draft picks. Was there one or two, Pierre, that you looked at and you went, I kind of like that player and that fit for that team?
Well, before the deadline, I really liked what the Islanders did. Zajac's a real good player for Barry Trotz in a playoff-type situation. He'll be very, very useful. Palmieri's a perfect New York Islander-type player. And so I really like what the Islanders did. I don't think enough people understand how well-coached they are. They talk about it, but they don't really know what they're seeing. They're as well-coached as any team in the league. And so you add those two players who are extremely coachable and can bring a little bit of something different. Palmieri brings offense, and Zajac brings huge face-off presence and also penalty kill and grinding ability and defending the league ability. I really like what the Islanders did.
Just a thought, too. Last night, the Montreal Canadiens defeated Toronto, and as it stands right now, Pierre, that looks like a first-round matchup. And I'm curious how you think that those two teams would match up in a head-to-head situation, and should there be some concern among Toronto fans that the Montreal Canadiens defeated them 4-2 last night?
I wouldn't be concerned about that game at all last night if I were Toronto or Toronto's fans. It's one of those games where Toronto didn't show up the first 15 or 20 minutes, and Montreal did. I give Montreal full credit, especially after what they did on Saturday night, which was absolutely stink to join out against Winnipeg, only getting 17 shots on goal. And getting smoked by the Jets. So, no, I wouldn't worry about that. There was no Nick Foligno playing last night for Toronto. He's going to be a huge difference maker, I believe, for that team. And, The difference, I think, in that series, Ian, no matter what happens, is Toronto's got Mitchell Marner, Austin Matthews, and John Tavares. Montreal doesn't have any quick strike offensive capability like those guys. They don't have any players like those three guys. And that's going to probably, if they play in the playoffs, that'll probably be the thing that separates them in the playoffs.
The one team that was really quiet yesterday that I thought was going to add somebody that really would have not pushed them over the top, but certainly made them more of a contender was Winnipeg. They only added Jordy Benn, who's more of a depth defenseman. Kevin Cheveldayoff said, quote, "It sends a message to the group that we have here that we believe in you." And you can hear the opposite, right? When a general manager trades for a player, they say, "We're sending a message to the group that we believe in you. That's why we traded for the player." And he's saying the opposite here. Why do you think that at the end of the day that he decided not to do something? Because Winnipeg looks to me like they're a good defenseman away from being able to run and gun with Toronto and maybe come out of that division.
Yeah, a lot of us thought that. I agree with you 100%, JR. I don't know why they did that, but I remember, you know, we've talked about this a lot. I thought this was going to be a very different kind of trade deadline. I think a lot of people in the league thought it would be. It definitely was. You can see it. Go read Steve Yzerman's quotes. This was the most different trade deadline he ever went through since he's been a general manager in the league in 2010. And I would agree. I you know, there just wasn't enough chatter. I saw it and I, you know, paid attention to it for a long time now. I think part of it too, and it has not. This is not putting it on Winnipeg, but I'm just going to say it around the league. I've told you this before, and I mean it sincerely. And I understand nobody's going to cry for the owners. I get it. The financial devastation that's gone on this year around the league is overwhelming. I don't think anybody has an idea of how painful this year is going to be for these ownership groups around the league. I just don't know how deep some of the owners really wanted to go. I'm not saying that happened in Winnipeg. But I'm just going to say that as a broad-based comment around the league. I'm just not sure. That's why I look at Carolina. Carolina is a legitimate contender to win the Cup. They are. They're a legitimate contender to win the Cup. They didn't do a thing. They did nothing. I have to believe some of that, you know, went on around the league. It's not just Carolina. It's a lot of teams around the league.
With that division, Pierre, as you look at it, Tampa, Nashville, Carolina, Florida, how important is it to finish in first place in that division? Because as I look at this, I'm thinking, as it stands right now, it's Tampa against Nashville and then Carolina, Florida. Like, if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you would much rather take your chances with Nashville than a first-round date with Carolina or Florida, right?
100%. I think it's so important. I've talked about that on some of the games I've done in that division. You desperately do not want to finish in the 2-3 hole. I prefer to be in the 1 hole. I really would. I would not want to be in the 2-3 hole there.
All right, let's talk about the Sens yesterday. Ian mentioned off the top Erik Gudbranson. That was not a huge surprise, but they did claim Victor Mete on waivers. We chatted a little bit with you about the possibility of that yesterday, so it comes true. I'll ask you a two-part question. First of all, are you surprised? I think Buffalo had the first dibs on him that they chose not to bring Mete in. And secondly, now that he is going to be here, what do you think the fit is on the Ottawa defense?
Well, I'll talk about Buffalo first. You have to remember long-term, they have Jake McCabe coming along. They have Jacob Bryson, who's an undersized defenseman out of Providence College, who they're really happy with. And Jacob Bryson's going to be a very good player. He's going to be like Matt Grizzlick. He's probably got a little bit more of an offensive game than Victor Mete does. So I think that's something to pay attention to, why Buffalo. And Buffalo also has Will Borgen coming off of injury. So I can understand why Buffalo wouldn't do it. In terms of Ottawa, I think the fit's good. I think he'll help them. You know, I think he'll be a 12 to 14 minute a game player. I think he'll play in the 5-6 position. And he'll be a good depth defenseman. You're not going to get a lot of offense out of him. That's just not his thing.
Sticking with the Senators, Pierre, it looks like we'll see Shane Pinto and Jacob Bernard-Docker play maybe as early as tomorrow. Like, what's a realistic expectation that the fan base should have for these two young men as they transition from the NCAA into the NHL? They're going to probably get somewhere between 12 and 13 games down the stretch. Like, how should we assess them, and what should the expectations be on them?
Turn them loose, let them play. They're good players. They've been playing in an elite program for a long time. They're both elite players, and I would expect they're going to do very, very well. I wouldn't. My expectation would be they're going to do extremely well.
Do you think that there's enough runway, whether they come in the next game, as Ian mentioned, or there's 13 games left here in Ottawa, Pierre. So if they come in on the weekend, there's a dozen games left. Is that enough time, do you believe, especially with Bernard Docker, that the Sens will have a good sense of where he is at in terms of where they could slot him in next season, be it as an NHL player for sure, or that he may not quite be ready? Is a dozen games enough?
100%, and I'm glad you brought that up. I think 8 to 10 is actually a good measuring stick for a lot of these players, especially when you have a foundation on which to study. So you're talking about major games at the NCAA level, major games at the World Junior level. It's not just a snapshot. You can see and gauge the growth of the player. So, no, the answer is, yeah, I think it's great. 12 games is perfect.
I'm also wondering here, as Ottawa's goaltending situation, Marcus Hogberg is healthy, Matt Murray's on the verge of coming back, and yet, Pierre, we've seen Anton Forsberg now start 3 consecutive games, and that includes with Marcus Hogberg being healthy enough to back him up. I look at this as the head coach is just at the point where I don't care what your name is. If you're giving us 920 save percentage, you're going to be my guy. But how important is this stretch drive for Ottawa to kind of get Matt Murray figured out? And if you're DJ Smith and you've got Anton Forsberg going really well, how tough is it to take that guy out and put in Matt Murray?
Yeah, it's really tough. Absolutely. This is a business based on results. Matt Murray hasn't delivered the results yet, so it's not easy. It's a great question. It's very fair. Matt's going to have to take care of himself and get in there and start the play.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. I can hear you padding through the airport, so safe travels.
I am.
And yep. We'll look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Thanks a lot, Ian. Have a great day, everybody.
NBC's Pierre Maguire on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Automotive Group.
We are back 8:37 on this Tuesday morning. Sens coming off a 4-2 win over the Jets last night. They're playing again tomorrow. This will be the first full practice, by the way, later on today for Jacob Bernard-Docker and Shane Pinto. Although we'll see if they actually do end up drawing in tomorrow. Seems like they're more pointed toward later in the week. Be it Saturday, which is the next game after today. All right, JR, Ian Mendez is in for Simmer today until 9 o'clock alongside Hammer. By the way, Ian, I want to thank you for picking me up for parts of this show. I got my jab yesterday, fellas. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But I've been running a little bit of a low-grade fever, so I didn't really sleep that well last
night. To be expected.
So I've been a little tired this morning, a little peckish, trying to drink more coffee, which really is the last thing you should do.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's actually really important. I'm glad you kind of brought this up on the air. It's really important that we hear from people who have had the shot, because I think there's a curiosity factor, right? There's the unknown, right? So the more people that we hear talking about the shot, how they're doing, how they're feeling, I think it really helps. So you got it yesterday after the show?
Yesterday afternoon. And
then what was the process like, just in terms of like did you have to wait outside? Because again, I think there's just a curiosity factor in the logistics involved here.
Yeah, we got it. I got it done at a pharmacy, and we found out on, I think, Sunday night. My wife ran into a friend who said the Shoppers Drug Mart in our area, I guess, got some, or anyway, they had some appointments. So she literally phoned Sunday night, and I got an appointment for yesterday afternoon because I'm in the 55 over crowd. So I got an appointment literally less than 24 hours later. So I phoned a few of the people in my neighborhood that I know that are in the same, that were kind of waiting for things, because I signed up a week and a half ago, right, when they first opened it up, and heard nothing. Like a lot of people have, right? So, but the whole process is very simple. No, they've got chairs inside your typical Shoppers Drug Mart. The nurse calls you in. You go, you know, fill out some paperwork or whatever. I'm not a big needle guy. Don't know about you guys. I said, I'm not looking at your needle. She goes, no problem. I didn't even know that she put it in. Like, literally did not feel it, and it was gone. Spit spat. You wait 15 minutes just to make sure you're okay. Walked out. Felt fine the rest of the day, but a little bit. A low fever, which is kind of, right, it's like when you get I don't know if you've ever got the flu shot before. Sometimes you get some aches and pains when you get the flu shot, which kind of means your body's kind of coming up with the stuff that it needs to ward things off. It means my body's working, which is what it's doing.
Did
right
you
now.
Walk okay. out with a nice lollipop or maybe a cookie
no.
there? A little reward, a little sticker?
Nothing. I got zero.
I got vaccinated?
Nada. But I have my next appointment coming up in, I think, late July or something like that. So, yeah, no issues. And you're right. I think it is important that people talk about it, because the only way we're going to end this thing sooner rather than later is by having everybody who has the availability to do it, quite frankly.
Did you go through the decision of which arm to get it in, like your dominant arm or your not? Like, did you, what'd you end up doing there?
Well, I had this discussion with, was it Michaela on the air, right?
Yeah.
Because she works in a hospital scenario, and I'm left-handed. And so the way the chair was,
beside the nurse, beside where the person administering the needle was turned so that my left arm. And I said, well, I'm left-handed and I'm a bit soft. Do you mind if I use my right arm because I don't want my left arm to be sore because I write with my left hand. So she said, no problem. She goes, I've done 70 shots today. You're the fourth person I put in my right arm. So I went with my non-dominant arm, which now Michaela said you should do your dominant arm because that's the one you use the most. So you'll kind of get over it more quickly because you're using it more. So, but I was too soft to do that. So I went with my other arm.
Okay. Yeah. See, I, these are the things I think it's important that we just kind of talk these things out, and the more that we get people talking about it, and then the fact that you're able to come back on the air the next day shows you that
side
effects are mild.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is like I said, when I have a low grade fever, it's literally if you touch my forehead, you wouldn't know that I was hot. It's one of those ones. I don't know if you've ever had ones like that before, where you can feel it inside. You feel like you're running a fever, but in terms of your actual temperature, it's not. So,
well, that's why you're showing off the gun show here to Ian right now on the Zoom.
Yeah.
You took the sweater off. You got the Fonzie T-shirt on. You got your deck of smokes up in the shoulder.
I was running a little bit hot, so I took my. I'm doing the show in a T-shirt, which I don't normally do. So yeah,
Ian shaved for you, but yet he's still in the T-shirt. Doesn't have a collar, but he shaved for you. That was nice.
It's all good. All good. Anyway, you guys are.
I look forward to getting mine. I mean, I guess at the pace we're at, I kind of guessed maybe June is I'll be right there.
You'll
you
be
think
before
so?
That. Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope so.
You're in your 40s, correct?
Yes.
Yes, and Ian, you're in your 40s, right?
Yep.
If I had to guess, I will say you guys will be, today's middle of April, I'll say you guys will be before the middle of May.
But my wife is, like, she's name brand shopping. Like, she wants to pick the one. Give me whatever. Whatever I can get, however I can help. Stick it in. Let's get her going.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next one.
My wife, who is not old enough, but because she works in a school, is actually going to get a shot at some point this week. She's all about, for no particular reason, she's all about, I want my Moderna. She's fixated on Moderna for no other reason than she likes the name.
I'm going to get a tattoo of whatever I get, wherever that needle went.
Give me my Moderna.
Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, whatever it's going to be. It's just going to be a tat right there. Let people know.
Anyway.
I just brought this up to Hammer here, Jared. I hate to spring a story on you, but
yes.
This is an unbelievable story in my opinion, okay? And we've heard about the XFL and the CFL potentially collaborating, right, and joining forces. Michael McCarthy is a fairly well-known football writer in the United States. Not Mike McCarthy, the coach, Michael McCarthy, the reporter. He has a story yesterday that says one of the options that they have on the table is a postseason game in which the CFL champion would play the XFL champion. So both leagues would have their regular seasons, and there might be some interleague games. They're saying this would be similar to like Major League Baseball interleague games. And then once the respective XFL CFL champions are crowned, they would face off in an interleague championship game. And at some point, there might be an all-star game.
This isn't high school intramurals.
Does this not seem bizarre to you guys?
Yes. Yeah. It's like, so hang on. So there would be a regular CFL season. There would be a regular XFL season.
Yes.
There might be some games in which they intermingle, as you say, swap leagues and then have a championship game. Here's the entire issue with that. They play different rules. Like, what are you going to do? Like, when the game is in, when Las Vegas is playing in Ottawa, you play CFL rules when the games are at home and you play XFL rules or four down football in the States?
Yeah, exactly. This is why I don't understand how this could work, but this is what's being floated out there. And they're also saying that this would help magnify the media rights deals, that this would be a great thing. I just don't see it. Like, me personally, I don't see how it would work where two different, like, it would be like it would be the same thing as having the Grey Cup champion play the Super Bowl champion.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How would you do that logistically?
The football is different. The size of the field is different. The XFL plays are based on the size of that field. So what? You come up to Canada and the XFL is just going to forget about the extra width of the football field and say, "Hey, we can't. We got to play between this."
It's like baseball stadiums. You go to a different baseball stadium. It's kind of like the Green Monster. They don't have that at every baseball park. So that's your home field advantage, the rules that you're playing by when you're in Canada.
I only want the championship game to end on a rouge. The American team didn't know what was happening.
Oh, my goodness. I just, you know what, this story, and I'm not that I've ignored the story. It just, it boggles my mind to think that somehow, some way, it's got to go, to me, it's got to go one way or the other. There can't be a middle ground on this. You're either all in on going four down football and with the American rules and everything and have, you know, the two leagues play together, or, and I don't think this would fly in the States, to be honest with you. I don't think three down football would sell in the United States. So I think it's either that if they do get together, I think it's going to be American rules. If I had to guess right now.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed when I saw the story again earlier this week. Just the CFL, there's no start date, right, for this potential 2021 season. And you start to get a little bit pessimistic, right, about even just getting any sort of CFL season and XFL participation notwithstanding. Just some sort of CFL season. I don't know what my optimism level is at this stage of the game.
Well, for just playing this season, absolutely. Well, there's a story that came out yesterday that the CFL is talking with the federal government about more financial support.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's be honest. They're not going to start the season on time. But even if they push it back and are still able to get a full schedule in, I don't foresee a scenario where you know, TD Place is going to be full of 24,000 fans for a game at best. Throughout most of the, at least into the summer, if not into the fall. Like, I've always circled kind of September 1st as a date when I think we might get back to some sense of normalcy a little bit. And even then, I don't think it's full stadiums, but maybe we, you know, we're partway along the way. But, you know, it's a gate-driven league. We've been told that so many times. So how is a league that is gate-driven, that is only able to open, let's say, even half of the seats or 25% or whatever, how are you going to make a go of it unless you get government support again?
Would you, and now, JR, this kind of ties us back to your original point of, you know, telling the listeners that you got your first dose of the vaccine. What's your comfort level once you've been vaccinated in going to a game? Let's say it's late August. And you've had your two shots and you feel like, hey, 70% of the population has been vaccinated. Would you guys feel comfortable going to a sporting event or any whatever concert once you've been vaccinated?
Do we have 100% agreement among the medical professionals that once you are fully vaccinated, that you can no longer develop the illness, the virus?
No. See, I think the point is you can develop the illness. The symptoms just won't be as serious that would lead to hospitalization.
Yeah,
that's my understanding, is that you can still get it. It just the symptoms will be quite watered down.
Yeah, you don't get as sick
once you've had the shot.
Yeah, so yeah, you know what? It's a great question. If you know the other thing that will come up as well is this whole idea of vaccine of cards, right? Where you have to show proof that you've had to go into, and a lot of people say that. You know, that goes against your civil rights in a lot of ways, for that, where you have to show ID, as it were, to get into certain places, whether that should be allowed or not. There's a whole level of questions here that we're going to have to sort through over the next few months as more and more people get vaccinated.
I'm going to need this vaccine card on my phone. If you're telling me I got to carry a piece of paper around everywhere, it's over. Forget it. Yeah. I will have lost piece of paper.
Yeah.
It's over.
What about
I need this on my phone.
What about if we brand you? What about if we just brand everybody that's fully like cattle?
This goes back to Hamer's point of getting the tattoo.
Yeah.
This
is proof right there. Yeah. Here you go.
Right there. Right here on the gun show. Yeah. AZ. I'm an AZ guy.
No, it's got to be full. It's got to take up the whole bicep. Yeah. You got to pull a little flex there too.
I don't have a big bicep, so I don't think you could get however many letters are in AstraZeneca. All right. Thoughts on any of that? Welcome. What would you like to see done with the Canadian Football League? This story continues to meander along, and the whole idea of the league playing this year under Canadian rules, let alone amalgamating next year with the XFL, it is a giant, giant question mark. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. We will take a break. Come back. One final segment with Ian. Don't forget, next hour, We'll replay for you Pierre Dorion's interview yesterday with Steve Lloyd from our pregame show, in which he touches upon all the deals that have been made and perhaps more importantly, kind of going forward with the younger players, what to expect to see through the end of this season and into the offseason as well. So we'll have that for you coming up after 9 as we continue along right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 8:55 on this Tuesday morning. One final segment with Ian Mendez in for Sabre Next Hour. Pierre Dorion on yesterday with Steve Lloyd to wrap up NHL trade deadline day. Of course, not a whole heck of a lot went on with the Sens yesterday. Just one minor move where Eric Gudbranson was traded to the Nashville Predators. And so what that does is it does open up spots going forward at this point with three veteran defensemen moved out. So I think at some point, Ian, we'll see Jacob Bernard-Docker, right, go in for Josh Brown, I'm guessing. And so Mete, Bernard-Docker, Brännström, Zub, Zaitsev, Shabbat. I think that'll be your sixth defenseman, right? And I think, you know, not ideal, but considering what we've seen here in Ottawa so far this year and all the debate about the defense going forward, I think that's about as close as what people have been calling for the entire year in terms of who they want to see on the back end in Ottawa.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting to me in this final dozen games, 13 games, is how that trio of Brännström, Victor Mete, and Jacob Bernard-Docker fare. Because I don't care if, no matter how well they play, JR, this team needs a top four defenseman, NHL ready, like a veteran type of guy for next season. If they want any aspirations of flirting with a playoff spot or at least being more competitive, that's going to be their biggest need. What I think this final stretch could do, though, is make us realize, is that defenseman needed on the left side or the right side? I think if Jacob Bernard-Docker can come in and play really well, JR, I think he can nudge that to be in the direction of the left side. And it's remarkable because I think for the longest time, we thought, well, they got so many left-shot defensemen. Well, in the last little while, they've gotten rid of Mike Riley, Christian Willanen, Maxime Lajoie. Like, they've gotten rid of a lot of their help on the left side. And Jacob Bernard-Docker is going to come in, and I think he's going to be pretty good. But that's a lot of pressure to put on a young man on the right side. If you listened to Pierre Dorion yesterday, I thought it was really interesting. He said, we think Erik Brännström is going to be a really good defenseman, and we have a superstar in waiting in Jake Sanderson. And I thought that was interesting, right? Like, that's the way that he was talking about Erik Brännström at the trade deadline a couple of years ago. The expectations have been dipped. I think this is just a waiting game to get to Sanderson. And I think Jake Sanderson is going to end up being your number two left-shot defenseman as early as the end of next season. So what do you do with the rest of it? That's what's going to be really interesting in the final month of the season.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the other thing to remember is I think a lot of people get stuck in the here's the sixth defenseman. You got to remember when you go through an entire and hopefully next year it's an 82 game season. You don't get through a season. You don't get through 10 games with six defensemen. You know, you need probably 10 defensemen. So this whole idea of, well, these are the six, so let's not worry about anything else. I mean, you need to develop guys that can come in and play at the NHL level. So, Jake Sanderson will not be here until the end of next year. But even as it sits right now, what did you think? I wanted to ask you before you go. Pierre McGuire said 8 to 10 games will be enough to assess, in his opinion, of whether Jacob Bernard-Docker can be a full-time NHL player next season or not. Do you agree with that?
I don't. I think you're going to need more, right? Like, I think there's been so many times where we see a small sample size of a player, and then we're like, yep, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and assume that the trajectory will continue the next year. The guy I always think about, do you guys remember that Peter Regan had like a bananas playoff run, I want to say 2010, for Ottawa.
Yep.
And he was really good. I think they lost to Pittsburgh in six games, but Peter Regan was really good in his small sample size. And everybody came back and like, well, Peter Regan is a top six forward. And what happened? Like, I'm very hesitant to take a small sample size on a young player who doesn't have a huge track record and then take that and move it forward and expect that they would just continue that. It's an up and down process. So for me, I'm curious to see what they'll do, but I'm a little hesitant in saying that definitively yes or no after 8 games or 10 games that we can say that this player is a full-time lock-it-in NHL player.
Yeah, I think a perfect scenario in the offseason is I still think they need to go ahead and sign a good quality veteran defenseman. And whether it's a guy to play with Shabbat, a right-handed shot that plays with Shabbat or whatever. I mean, guys can flip over. I think I watched a lot of North Dakota games this year with Jake Sanderson. He played as much on the right side as the left shot than he did on his side. They were swapping sides all the time. I found that to be really interesting. At points, sometimes the right shot would play on the left side and vice versa under Brad Berry, which was really, really unique. But as we know, the coaching staff here in Ottawa likes the guys to play on their strong side. But I think Jake Sanderson is so versatile and going to be so good. I could also see a scenario in which, as a left shot, he plays with Thomas Chabot on the right side to form a really, really strong number one duo.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be putting maybe all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. But I think the coaching staff, the philosophy here, JR, is if you're a defenseman with an offensive upside to your game, we'd prefer that you stay on your strong side. If you are a stay-at-home, kind of just move the puck kind of guy, we're okay moving you between the sides. And it'll be interesting because I you're right. If Sanderson feels like the right side is where he wants to play and that's where it's going to work, I don't know. But it is going to be really interesting. And the other thing here, JR, in the final month of the season, are you not shocked? Not maybe shocked is too strong of a word. But Anton, if I would have told you Anton Forsberg would make three consecutive starts after Marcus Hogberg was completely healthy and now Matt Murray's on the verge of coming back, wouldn't you have been like, wait, what? Like, what's going on, right? Yeah. This guy was a mercenary, pick him off the waiver wire, extra body, and now he's starting ahead of Marcus Hogberg.
How old is Forsberg?
28, I want to say.
28, yeah. I wonder if it's almost to the point now where they decide to let Marcus Hogberg go in the offseason and maybe sign Anton Forsberg as a veteran backup potentially. But this is where I kind of go back to, you know, with the goaltending, with only a dozen games to go, you need to get Matt Murray up and running and getting him some games. I think would like to see what Marcus Hogberg is all about and see whether you want to offer him a contract in the offseason. You're kind of running out of games to do to make these assessments because there's only one net. You can only play one goalie at a time, and you've got two goalies that you really need answers on, and there just aren't a lot of games to get those answers, especially with a new goalie coach in town, too.
Yeah, and I think even if, let's say, Matt Murray comes back and in the last 2 weeks of the season he's lights out, I still don't know that you're going to go into the offseason with 100% confidence, right? There's still going to be a little yeah, but voice in the back of your head for Matt Murray until he gets it going for like 10, 12, 15 weeks in a row where you feel like he's good. And you're not going to get that that kind of track here in the final month of the season.
Absolutely. All right. Good stuff, my friend. Really appreciate you jumping on the last couple of days. You can read all of Ian's stuff in the pages of The Athletic. Always. What do you do? Like 3 to 4 articles a week, usually on the Sens?
Yeah. Pretty much 3 to 4. And that's the end of my shift. It was a trade deadline. It was a 1-for-1 trade.
Yes.
Mendes for Simmons.
There you go. And by the way, we did our first draft lottery simulator if you weren't up this morning, and Ian picked his hometown of Vancouver. Just so you know, do not blame the messenger. That one is on Mendes. All right, we'll catch up soon. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, have a great day, guys.
All right, there's Ian Mendes joining us. We'll take a break, get you the latest news from 580 CFRA, run down the scoreboard. And when we come back, Pierre Dorion's visit with Steve Lloyd yesterday as a part of our Sens pregame show. If you missed it, we'll have that for you. Lots on trade deadline and who left town, and then a lot on the younger players and what's to come as well. We'll have that for you when we return here on this Tuesday morning. Sens coming off a 4-2 win over the Jets last night. Winnipeg's in town for another game again tomorrow, right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.